you got to be prepared. And in so many ways, you're putting the audience at ease. You're telling them, I know what I'm doing here. And I felt that immediately when I saw you in Lovecraft. It was just like, wow, here's a young man who knows exactly what he's doing.
We can end our chat here. It's been said by John Lithgow.
Welcome to Trade Secrets, an HBO Max podcast where you get to listen in on an intimate and unexpected conversation between two great storytellers. Trade Secrets brings together actors, writers, directors, and other creative pros to discuss their work, process, and passions. And we also make room for the surprises that come from chatting about everyday human experiences, too. We're talking quirky obsessions, that time they accidentally crashed a wedding, whatever it is that our guests want to explore. Today's conversation honestly feels like a warm blanket that you'll want to cozy up with. We have the legendary actor John Lithgow of Perry Mason and star of Lovecraft Country, Jonathan Majors. Their excellent performances on both of these HBO Max dramas have earned both actors Emmy nominations this year. In this chat, John and Jonathan cover fatherhood, social media, and get deep into the craft of theater. Be sure to listen for the moment when John realizes that Jonathan saw him play King Lear in Shakespeare in the Park years ago. And as a heads up, please know there are some Perry Mason spoilers in this conversation. Coming to you via Zoom from John's house in Montana and Jonathan's flat in London, grab a cup of tea and enjoy this charming chat.
Hey, Jonathan, how great to talk to you.
Oh, man, Mr. Lithgow. Hello, how are you?
And you be sure to call me John from now on.
You got it, John. Dear Journal, today Mr. Lithgow told me I may call him John. John, do you have shoes on?
I do. I do. Actually, I dressed quite nicely from top
to
toe.
Too.
Yeah, I just
too.
Thought I just wanted to feel dignified in your presence.
Too. I was like, I get dressed. That said, I do not have shoes on, but I do have really I have clean clothes on and a collared shirt because right,
you look great. You look great.
Thank you, sir.
And this is a brand new linen shirt.
Just
for
brand
you.
New too, just for you.
No, hey. You should know that this is the first time Jonathan and I have ever met, and I am just thrilled by this chance. Let me just start by asking you a question. Where the hell did you come from? When I see an actor like you just pop into my field of vision, I'd never seen you before Lovecraft Country. Then I went running back to see The Last Black Man in San Francisco. But these are your first big jobs, aren't they? Give me your origin story.
I'm a Texan. That's where I'm from. And I graduated 2016 from the Yale School of Drama. It's been kind of a crazy thing. You mentioned The Last Black Man in San Francisco. You know, it happens in layers, doesn't it? It happens in levels.
Yeah.
It was the first time I had a heavy, heavy responsibility in a picture. Mm-hmm. And it just was that time, I reckon, because I tested for Atticus Freeman and Lovecraft while I was on The Last Black Man in San Francisco and got the role.
Yeah. You were off to such an amazing start. Did you realize just how amazing it was when it happened?
Oh, man. One of the things I really try to do for myself is really just keep my head down and not really pay too much attention to what's going on around me. And sometimes that helps a lot, and sometimes that can be hurtful. But in this case, I just kind of paid attention to what I was doing.
Well, was it startling to suddenly be doing movie acting? Because up until then, Yale is real heavy theater training.
Well, I'd been training to be an actor since I was about 14 years old.
Yeah.
I got into a bit of trouble and found myself in theater classes a lot. Mm-hmm. I had this teacher named Miss LJ, Miss Lee Jong. And she kind of walked me through it.
Yeah.
I had this teacher named Gerald Friedman.
Oh.
You know, he said to me my first year of drama school, to all of us, that he's training us to be actors. And actors should be able to do radio. They should be able to do television, film, scream on the subway, yo, 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 125th Street, stand up. You know, they should be able to do all that. You know, that yeah. is the communication and the job of an actor. And I really took that to heart. And so the transition, you know, the medium is different. You know, waking up is different. But I kind of felt that it was the same for me.
You and I started the same way. I mean, I went to college, but then went to drama school after that in London.
And at Lambda, correct?
At Lambda, that's right. And it was all Chekhov, Shaw, Shakespeare, Restoration, comedy, you know, like movies was the last thing on my mind. I suppose it's different nowadays. I mean, we're talking 50 years ago when I was in drama school, and there must be a good deal of attention paid to what's waiting for you in the profession now. But I, when I was first on a movie set, nobody had told me anything. I knew nothing. And I always, it was a freaky experience, but I've always felt that insecurity is a good thing when you're acting in front of a camera, you know.
Insecurity and ignorance, I would say.
Yes, right. Because the camera's catching all sorts of stuff that's much better than anything you could plan or calculate.
Is there a difference for you in your process? I saw your Lear.
Oh my God. I don't hear that very often.
I loved it. And I saw it twice, actually. The nuance that you brought to that performance, does your instrument feel different?
Thank you for saying some very nice things, Jonathan. That really means a lot to me.
My mom is a pastor. I'm just telling the truth.
I think theater and film and TV are very different in one basic way. All the major things are the same. You got to know your lines. You got to be prepared. You got to make connection. You got to understand a scene. But in theater, you spend 4 or 5 weeks isolated from your audience and getting it exactly right and getting it to the point where you may be nervous the first time you face an audience, but you know exactly what you're going to do. And in film, it's what we just glancingly mentioned. There is insecurity. It is a somewhat improvisational medium. I grew up in a theater family, and my father produced Shakespeare festivals, just like Shakespeare and Company out in Ohio. The Great Lakes Shakespeare Festival was his creation all those years ago. And so I was in lots of plays just because it's what you did in my family. But I started out playing, you know, Froth, Nim, Pinch, you know, all these complete throwaway character parts.
You know, it reminds me of your character in Perry Mason, E.B. Jonathan. He in your series, Jonathan can't make it to the end of the movie, to the end of the series, because if he does, the series doesn't happen that way because he wouldn't allow it. The character has so much gravity that it wouldn't happen that way. So it is best that the producers, the writer room says, okay, let's pull him aside. That way, you know, our hero, right, Perry Mason can handle this, right? This way our heroes, Romeo and Juliet, can handle this.
It's rocket fuel. I regard roles like that as booster rockets.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they hurl the plot forward.
Yeah.
And I fully understood my role. I didn't take this as an indignity at all. But it is kind of our lot. You know, you play those roles and you flame out fast. I would compare E.B. Jonathan with Lord Farquaad in Shrek. He gets eaten by a dragon. But then there was, you know, there were 4 sequels to Shrek. And I like to think I had something to do with that.
You definitely launched it, my brother. You definitely launched it.
The thing about being an actor is you've got to go on somebody else's journey all the time. I mean, every time you're working with a new director in a new genre, in a new kind of work, you got to go on their journey. And of course, you have a huge role to play in the creative process and making it happen.
Right.
They're taking your lead as much as you're taking their lead. But somebody else is creating the atmosphere. I mean, there's so much difference between doing Third Rock from the Sun, wild sitcom in which you've been desperately rehearsing for about 4 days in order to hit the audience. I mean, it's like review comedy. That is so different from doing, well, either King Lear or showing up to do 2 days on somebody else's movie. The first day of work I did on Dexter, that horrifying first scene where I murder a nude young girl in a bathtub. You know, it's like incredibly psychotic serial killer. I met that young girl for the first time about 20 seconds before we got into the bathtub together, stark naked. And, you know, that's movies. You got to be ready for all sorts of astonishing surprises. And, well, you're already accustomed to that.
There's such a deep, instant vulnerability that comes into play.
Mm-hmm. You got to be prepared. And in so many ways, you're putting the audience at ease. You're telling them, I know what I'm doing here. You know, it's like, and I felt that immediately when I saw you in Lovecraft. It was just like, wow, here's a young man who knows exactly what he's doing.
We can end our chat here. It's been said by John Lithgow. Goodbye, everybody.
Well, now, was there any theatrics in your own family? Was it a total surprise to them when you became an actor?
No, I mean, I always had a lot of energy. I remember my grandparents saying, you know, about all of us, I wish we could bottle up this energy. And I'm now saying that same thing to my daughter, which is crazy because I know what he means. I know what they mean now.
Now, how old is your daughter now?
My daughter's 8 years old.
And what did she make of seeing you on the TV screen?
Oh, it's the best thing in the world, man. Every night I pray, you know, and I've done so for a very long time. You know, Lord, just keep me strong. Keep me, you know, all the things I want, all the things I'm desiring. And, you know, keep me humble amongst all things. Keep me humble. And he's done that. That's happened a lot. And nothing is more humbling than an 8-year-old daughter who cares nothing about what it is you're doing. She just does not care. If I'm doing voices, she's into it. Other than that, she's like, okay, can we, come on, Dad, let's keep, throw me on the bed. Yeah, throw me on the bed. You know what I mean? Right. Can we run?
Yeah.
So we're both artists, both actors. We both come from theater backgrounds. And we're both fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got the one and thank God for her. But I wonder for you, having three, how have you managed to play that role?
Oh, boy. Well, it's they are the ones who have managed.
Amen.
It is really tough because I've been away a lot. And my older son, I have two sons and a daughter. My older son is from my first marriage. Mm. And it was a real, real tough rupture in his life when that marriage ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I was away from him a lot. I ended up in Los Angeles in a new marriage, and he was still in New York and was only able to visit me in the school year in the summers.
Yeah.
That was the great hardship. My two kids with Mary, my wife now of 40 years, I was away a lot for them too, especially when they were little, when I was still struggling to get moving.
Yeah.
And was taking jobs anytime I could. And a lot of those jobs took me away. It's really hard. God never meant actors to be fathers, I guess.
Because it's
very hard on kids. They also want the real John. Like, I did a job in Brazil that was about 5 months long in the Brazilian Amazon when my younger two kids were about 6 and 7 years old. Now, that's a long time away. And there have been many different versions of that. I did a cliffhanger in Italy, which was 4 months. The family came over when we were all in Rome. And when they went home, my 8-year-old son said, I don't want to go home. I want to stay here with you. And I said, well, Nate, it's impossible. I'm away working all day. He says, it doesn't matter. I'll come with you. And I said, okay, Nathan, you come with me. For 2 days, I have to work the next 2 days. You come with me on the set. If you still want to stay after that, then you can stay. He came with me out to Cinecittà with Sly Stallone and Michael Rooker, all these hardcore cliffhanger dudes.
Okay.
And they were the best days of his life.
Oh,
So by God, he stayed with me for 6 weeks.
Beautiful.
Everything I did, including late night suppers, you know, after midnight, with the other actors, every minute on the set, he was there. And he remembers that as the best 6 weeks of his childhood.
Yeah.
An incredible adventure. We took all these long drives. I mean, it's just a matter of giving them your time when you can. And I mean, they're all three of them are wonderful human beings. So I take only a little bit of credit for that. It's them. When my kids came along, it was like I discovered I had a shadow. It's like I didn't have a shadow until then. It's just something in your life that's more important to you than yourself.
All of it I can relate to.
But I would never put my kids on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel my personal life is a very precious, treasured, and private thing. And I just try to make a distinction, but you don't do it at all. And I admire that. I have to say, to me, that's a kind of principled stance.
I'll take that. I think over time, the Insta, Google, Facebook chat tweet, they keep adding to it, you know, Insta, Google, Facebook chat tweet,
TikTok, Snapchat
chat. It almost feels taboo not to be on it, you know, and especially when we get in territory like this where it's like, well, why aren't you on it? You too good for it? What you hiding, man? What's wrong with you? You know, all these things, yeah. You know, and for me, it's like same thing's wrong with me. That's wrong with everybody else. It's just you'll never know.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? You'll never know.
It's so interesting when you get a job.
Yeah.
The first people you hear from are the costume designer to get your sizes and the social media officers to make sure that you're going to brag about yourself on behalf of the project.
I'll tell you this, though. I'll speak for my generation, and I mean this. And you can't clap back via social media because I'm not on it. Yeah. A lot of us are going short when we should be going long, you know. And there's something about really playing the long game for me. Right. I like the slow build. I like the process. I like the getting to know someone. I like the search. I like the mystery of getting to know a person, getting to know an artist, getting to hunt for material, getting to discover things. I too want to be in that position. I too want to offer that to people because how do you get to know about the story between a young John Lithgow and his son, Nat, correct?
Nate.
How do you get to know about the story about young John Lithgow and Nate? You've got to talk to the man. You know, to me, that's gold. I'm going to remember that story, right? Not the story that's been printed on your Twitter, Google, Face chat. I'm just not going to remember it. How could I? I'm going to look at another one 2 seconds later. That's just how my brain works.
Well, and it's also, I mean, yes, we're sharing everything we've said today with the public, but I was really telling you that story, you know?
Yeah.
Now, tell me, one of the best gigs I've had in the recent years was 8 months in London doing The Crown. You're in London now?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what you're doing there.
I'm actually doing a lot of dancing, of Balinese dancing in
Balinese dancing?
Topeng, to be exact, yeah, in my living room. Because it's what I do in preparation for work. It's a part of my process.
For all work or for what you're doing in London?
Yeah, for all work.
What is it?
So the Balinese Topeng dance is a secular and spiritual form of art in which the Balinese tell stories of their history, of their culture, of their spirituality through these masks. Sitikadia is one of the major masks for ceremonies. Sitikadia translates to the one that gets things done. And that's a great deal of will, right? That energy. There's also the King of Bali, which is another mask. And that mask has a certain energy to it. Maybe about 5-6 years ago, I guess, I was introduced to it. And I began to introduce it to my work.
But now tell me about your work in London right now.
We're here shooting Ant-Man. I'm on a project here.
And is Paul Rudd? Paul Rudd is Ant-Man?
Paul Rudd is still Ant-Man, yes.
You have to give him my best. I adore that guy.
Yeah, good guy. Family man, too.
Is this your first long period of time in London?
It is. Cool. We are a long way from Texas, I tell you that much.
It's cool, isn't it?
It's so beautiful. A fox just walked across my yard.
Isn't that cool about London, that there are foxes?
Yeah.
Careful, there's about 20 horsemen. They'll be showing up in about 2 seconds.
I understand why Shakespeare could write about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is kind of, as far as the nature is concerned, everything seems accepted.
Yeah.
You know, things that we would mow down back home. Are there any other cheat sheets you can give me since I have you?
About London?
About process?
I don't know. As you know, it's so different one job to another.
Yes.
When I worked in London, I was playing Churchill about 4 or 5 years ago, and that was a matter of completely changing myself physically and learning and speaking. Stuffing things into my mouth to give him my that lisping in the back. You know, working in very precisely, right. Working on a Judd Apatow movie and working on Winston Churchill, not to mention Bombshell, playing Roger Ailes with 2.5 hours of makeup.
And I have to mention Lear as well.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, with the beard. I saw that preparation. We all saw that preparation.
Well, that was a two or three month long preparation, simply growing the beard.
That's it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a pretty good long beard. All I did was go every night, and I grew it much quicker that way.
Wow.
No, but with Lear, I knew that the huge challenge was going to be stamina.
Yeah.
And so I started learning it 3 months before. So by the time I got there, I could work on those 4 weeks or 4 or 5 weeks purely as a matter of getting my strength up, and growing a beard.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, when you take on a role like that, it's imperative that you are present, you are open, you are able to, you're like a prize fighter.
Yeah.
And you're in the ring the whole time. And every scene's running through you. And you've got to be there to hold the space for your scene partner, to help tell this story, to let them guide your ship. And then they get to go back into the wings. And then you sit there.
Yeah, right.
And maybe you'll get a soliloquy. Maybe somebody else will get a speech, and you'll get to,
take a deep breath.
Get your heart rate down.
Well, Shakespeare knew about this. I mean, he was an actor, and he wrote for actors.
Yeah.
Act four of the 5 acts of every one of his great tragedies, you know, the title role, that actor can completely rest. He's not in it. Hamlet's not in act four. Lear is not in act four. Macbeth is not in act four. He was kind to actors. He gave you a nice breather before the last huge push. Because the act five is always the most exhausting.
It's all. Act five, it's all.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's fire and brimstone. You gotta smell, yeah. you smell the barn at that point.
Yeah. But it's that Lear was a fantastic experience. And until then, I wish I had a nickel for every time an interviewer asked, is there some role that you want to play someday? I would always say King Lear. But now that I've played it, I have no answer to that. I just have to wait around for other people to have bright ideas for me.
Would you maybe go back to it?
I would actually like to. There's about a 15-year window of opportunity, maybe only 10, where you're young enough to play King Lear because of the sheer
stamina,
but you're old enough to be right for the part. And by that, by the time you get to be 79, 80, you better not even try. It's just too hard.
I bet you could do it.
Well, maybe a radio production of it. So. Now, what about you? Do you aspire to getting back to the theater? Do you miss the theater?
Oh, I do. I do miss it a lot. Something about the intimacy of it in a different way, and it's different.
Yeah.
You have to, there's something gladiatorial about it that I really, it's very much more like church,
Yeah.
I would say it's Pentecostal. It's Baptist.
Because you're living through the story at the same moment the audience is hearing it and feeling it. It's a much, much more intense experience, as intense as movie acting is.
Well, it's different, isn't it? Because movie acting feels, to stay with the religious metaphor, it's more like confession. It's more like confession. You load yourself up fully with all the sins of the character, with all the bad stuff, all the good stuff of the character, and you get in there and you step onto the set and you just confess it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to scream at the priest. He's right in front of you. He's right next to you.
Yeah.
You can just tell him. You can just tell her what it is, you know. It's a different thing. I think it's a good balance, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny, and I'm provoked. I'll say this. I think if I had come at it a different way, I would halt everything and try to run back to the theater. But I'd done so much of it, you know, and trained in it so much that I'm still into the confessional vibration a little bit, you know?
It's just going to be so interesting to see what happens to you, Jonathan, because you're so equipped. You're equipped in two very different disciplines, so you can go back and forth. I've always felt that was a piece of very good luck that I had. The first 10 years of my career was New York theater. I did a couple of small parts in movies, but I didn't quite know what I was doing. On stage, I felt like I was sort of learning what my capacities were as an actor, but also what my limitations were, and really just developing all kinds of muscles that would not go away. You can always go back to the theater.
Yeah.
I remember when I wrapped up 6 years on Third Rock from the Sun, where I was very well known for that period of time as this kind of lunatic clown. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just sort of went to ground. I went back to New York and I just did two or three plays in a row, including my first musical. And working with playwrights, and just I sort of went into a sort of big movie, big media trough, and just played for live audiences for a while.
Yeah.
This was a good time to just let people forget about Third Rock and then rediscover it.
Well, you have such a capability to access and share different parts of yourself. You know, I mean, I think that is not a characteristic that a lot of actors have, you know, and you have the appetite, feels like, to go to that place, you know, for your character in Third Rock of the Sun, and then go to a different place. And I think audiences view us as we want to be viewed, you know. If you're brave enough to share a certain part of yourself, they'll accept it, you know, but they can always tell when you bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's where I think folks get in trouble. You know, I think that's where we can all get in trouble.
Well, I hope we do work together sometime. I mean, that's why I did this interview.
Get out of here.
Start thinking about what you and I could do together.
Okay. And, you're talking shit. I
and
will.
And then we can remember this as our own origin story, okay?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
This has been so much fun.
Such a
pleasure. I just loved it. I really loved it.
Really good. Really good. I'm so happy.
And good luck. Good luck at the Emmys.
My brother, you too. You too.
I fully expect to lose to your cohort, Michael K. Williams. And he deserves it. And I'll be happy for him. I've had my share.
That is the most, that's the sweetest thing I've ever heard. My goodness.
Thanks for listening to Trade Secrets. You can stream all of Perry Mason and Lovecraft Country right now on HBO Max. And listen to Lovecraft Country Radio on your favorite podcast platform, too. Keep in mind that each episode of Trade Secrets will feature a different pair of creative pros from some of the most talked about content on HBO Max. And the conversations will drop on a surprise schedule. So if you haven't already, definitely make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We have some amazing duos coming up that you don't want to miss. So stay tuned. Trade Secrets is a production of HBO Max and Pineapple Street Studios. Beyondrea July produces the show. Brianna Garrett is our associate producer. Our editor is Darby Maloney. Hannes Brown is our engineer. Gabrielle Lewis is our senior managing producer. Our executive producers are Barry Finkel, Jenna Weiss-Berman, and Max Linsky. To support the show, please follow, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts and tell a friend. And as John talked about during this episode, remember, sometimes the short-lived parts of life are the rocket fuel that propels us forward. Until next time.